Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. It's time for the car show, which is going to take place for the next maybe hour or two.
2 hours.
2 hours?
Yeah, that's what it usually is.
Okay. All righty. Thank you very much for that. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960 is the phone number if you have a car question or car problem. And we're going to talk about self-defense for car expense.
Okay.
But first, we're going to talk about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Since 1970, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been providing perfect automotive service, oil changes, maintenance service, light truck repair, check engine lights, whatever, in the Mesa area. Since 1970, they've been around in the Mesa area. They have ASC-certified technicians. They provide you the highest level of automotive service. And I like and respect Brian and Thelma, who own Thompson's Auto Repair. So if you don't have a repair shop, the only shop in Mesa that I recommend is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. And that's on Main Street just east of Stapley. Main Street just east of Stapley. Okay. What do you got to say for yourself?
Not much today. I missed a lot of garage sales because I had to come and do this.
Yeah. Well, that's just too bad. Anyway, I got an email from a guy, and he wanted to know about a speedometer cable, what the proper way to lube it and stuff.
Okay.
One of the things that you want to do when you're going to lube a cable like that is you want to put the back of your hand against the speedometer plastic.
Okay.
And the dash, and see if you can feel the cable. You can feel the noise. Now, sometimes the cable is sticky, and the cable is a small round cable that's very flexible. On each end, it has squares.
Okay.
But in the middle, it's coiled up. So hopefully that's a visual that, and it could be 2 or 3 feet long, but it basically goes from the speed sensor on your transmission all the way up to the back of your dashboard. Now, many of the newer cars have electronic speedometer, so that doesn't apply. But in the older cars, certainly from probably, I don't know, 1990 backwards and could be from 2000 backwards.
Mm-hmm.
So the speedometer cables make a noise, and it's also speed related. So when you're going slow, it's chick, 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 and then when you're going faster, it's different. So anyway, you disconnect the cable from the back of the speedometer, and that's not easy. It's something that's difficult to do. And you have to know how to unlatch it anyway. So you pull the speedometer cable down, and you can pull the cables just straight out. And almost always, you'll find a couple of brown spots on this wound cable. Then these brown spots are much bigger than the cable itself.
Okay.
And those are your troubled areas.
What is it?
It's just old grease.
Okay.
It's just old grease. So you take some carb spray, and you clean up those any dirt, any imperfections on the cable. Then when you're done, you spray it with brake spray. Now, carb spray leaves a film, but brake spray cleans the film up.
Okay.
So that's what, and carb spray is a lot better cleaner than brake clean is. So you use those two products. Then you take some white lithium grease and you put it in the center of the palm of your hand and you drag the cable through it. And you just lube the cable. Then you slide it back in the housing. You put it back on the back of the speedometer. If the noise is the same after you've done that, then the head on the speedometer is bad.
Okay.
But about 80%, maybe even higher than that, when you lube the cable, that will do it. I can't tell you when the last time we lubed a cable at our shop. I just don't remember the last time somebody came in with a noisy, you know, speedometer cable.
Okay.
So it's not something that's real common, nevertheless.
Okay. So he had an older vehicle and he had that problem.
Yes, it appears that that's what the situation was. Okay, so when we go in and we talk about car repair, much of what we talk about has to do with self-defense. What do you do when you're faced with something that makes you uncomfortable? A lot of times folks will take their cars in and they'll say, I have a clunk when I stop. And then the phone call back might be, well, your clunk is your lower control arm bushings, but in addition to that, you have two motor mounts that are broken and you're way past the hoses and belts, and along with that goes a lot of fluids. That's kind of overwhelming.
Yes, it is.
You took it in for just nothing more than a clunk, and the clunk has ballooned into $2,000 worth of repair.
Yes.
So my advice, and especially to women, you can't really teach guys about car repair because they all know what it's all about. But for ladies, the ladies' answer is let's stick with the problem I have. So write all that stuff down that I need, but let's stick with the problem I have and let's fix it first. I'm a little uncomfortable and all of a sudden it's ballooned to 2,000 or 3,000. So how much is the lower control arm bushing that's bad, or how much? Well, if one's bad, you need to do all four. Mm-hmm. And then the question is do I really need to do all four?
Right.
And is there savings in labor? So can you do all four at substantially less labor than just do one? And there is no, in this particular case, there is no opportunity for you to save labor. When you pull the lower control arm off, it takes a second to replace one, or doesn't take a second, but it's a short period of time for one versus two. Because
right.
You're already ready. You got all your equipment there. You're punching out the bearing, the bushing. You're putting in a new bushing. What difference does it make? The cost of the bushing and a little bit of time. So if it takes $125 to take the lower control off, it's going to take $20 to do the first one and $10 to do the second one if everybody bills appropriately.
Yes.
So that's the kind of issue it is. In so many words, what you're saying is let's fix it what I brought it in for. And then if I can develop trust and you fix it like you said and you stay in the estimate, I might reward you with some of the other stuff.
Yes.
The second issue is the thing that drives me crazy is I say to you, Mrs. Salem, you need a transmission service. And you say, well, let me look at the owner's manual to see if I'm in that mile or time range. Oh, you don't need to worry about that, Mrs. Salem. That owner's manual is not built for Arizona. It's not written for Arizona. This is the response to that. This is cut them off at the knees kind of response. Oh, I'm sorry. They didn't give me an Arizona owner's manual. Would you order one for me?
Mm-hmm.
Because there is no such animal.
They'll never get one.
And then at that point, you're going to get the person in front of you, man or woman, service writer, they're stepping. All of a sudden, they're dancing because they don't know what to say.
But they're trained.
Well,
you know?
And in all kinds of, whether it's the chain stores, the independent garages, or the dealerships, they're trained to sell.
Right.
And so the whole idea is to bring you in on the 1995 oil change, but we need to have a $300 average ticket price. Now, you and I both know we interviewed somebody not too long ago, and he had been working at a quick lube facility. Now, this doesn't paint them all with one brush, but I do know which one he was working at.
Right.
So at least the one, he said, we'd bring him in on a cheap oil change, and we just had kind of a requirement by management to bring that ticket up to north of $300. An oil change still costs us more in cost than it does anything else.
$19.95, yeah.
And even if you're in the semi-synthetics and you're $35 or $40, the 5 quarts of oil, the filter, plus the labor to do it, plus the service writer's time to write up the work order, plus parts time to bring, it doesn't work.
We don't, yeah.
We lose money.
Right.
And so the whole idea is how cheap can you go? And if I'm at $29.95 for a conventional and the guy down the street wants more business, he's going to go less than my $29. But he still has a responsibility to himself or to the shop to bring that ticket price up.
Sure.
Who we got, Gil?
We have Lee.
Lee, good morning to you. What can I do for you?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 2005 Envoy, CMC Envoy.
Okay.
And as I'm coming to a stop and I'm applying the brake, right before I stop, probably 5 miles an hour or less, it appears that, like, the pedal releases, almost like the anti-lock releases. Something happens.
Well,
go ahead.
You aren't in anti-lock brake time. Anti-lock only when it's going down the road, the ABS computer watches the rotation of all four tires. And if it sees one locks up, then it dumps the pressure to that tire, and then it gently applies pressure again. It's almost seamless to the driver. So what I hear you saying is you're coming in, and just at the very end, you feel something in the brake pedal.
Right.
Okay, can you duplicate it every time?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know what that is.
Yeah,
it's not
a fading or anything. It's more of a...
Yeah, he's talking about there's movement in the pedal.
Pedal.
Yeah, and I'm not quite sure. How many miles are on your Envoy?
I think it's got about 160,000, and it's almost like it doesn't release. It's almost like it feels like it releases the brakes a tiny bit, not totally. But yeah, it's very noticeable, and other people have felt it also. It's not when I use a heavy application; it's when you use a lighter application.
Okay, I'm going to think out loud here. Have you had brakes on it in 160,000 miles?
Yeah, I mean, I've only had it for about a year, so okay. I haven't changed them out, but they look, you know, the discs look pretty good.
Okay, now, I was hoping for, and you don't know, because I know you don't know, because you just bought it, but it typically would have been through two sets of shoes or three, depending on who's driving it and stuff like that. I'm wondering if the rear brakes are in adjustment. I'm wondering if the rear brakes are releasing because they're real loose. Now, he probably has four-wheel disc, and so there's a process to adjust the brakes, unlike the process we had when we had rear drum where you backed up and slammed on the brakes. That helped adjust them. So right. On disc brakes, you can't. Here's what I want you to try. I don't know the answer to your question. What part of town do you live in?
Oh, it's Phoenix.
Okay. On east or west of Central?
West of Central.
Okay.
Actually, no, I'm sorry. He's just about Central, I guess you'd say, 7th Avenue, or 7th
okay.
Street.
Is it 12th Street in Glendale close by?
It's not too bad.
Okay. Kelly Clark's at 12th Street in Glendale. My advice to you would go and talk to Jesse and say, and not on a Monday morning or Friday afternoon for obvious reasons.
Right.
And so you're going to stop and say, Jesse, I was talking to Mark Statham, and he doesn't know what this is. So he suggested I come over and ask you, I can duplicate it, Jesse. Would you take a ride with me? And so I'd like very much to show you what it does, and then I'd like very much to switch places and have you feel what I'm talking about. And then at that point we'll talk about, you know, the further diagnostic process and then what it's going to cost to fix it. But somebody needs to drive it, because it's not that you're doing anything wrong. It's just you're using words I've never heard in 39 years. So I'm unclear. Now, the other thing you can do is go behind the shopping center where you're not going to bother anybody, or go through a self-service car wash, because the concrete's always real slick at a self-serve car wash. And so pull into the self-serve car wash. Nobody's there. Do it at night. And then just kind of hammer your brakes. And then get out, and let's make sure that there's skid marks on all four brakes, and the fronts will be twice as long as the back.
Okay,
fronts are twice as long as the back. And then if you say, Jesse, when I do a panic stop on slick concrete, all four wheels are locking up and the fronts are twice as long as the back, he's going to be, we're both going to be, wow.
Right.
This might be something that you have to wait till it gets worse and till easier, and that'll make it easier to find. But anyway, have Jesse take a ride with you and see what he says.
And that's
12th Street in Glendale.
Yep.
Oh, and the name of it, I'm sorry, is Kelly Clark Automotive. Kelly Clark Automotive. Kelly
okay.
with a K. Thank you very much, Lee. 602-508-0960. The lines are open. If you'd like to ask a car question, you can. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife, Renee Salem, and we've both been in the auto repair industry for quite a few years.
Way too many.
Way too many? Thanks a lot. Way too many. All right. That's okay. That's fair enough. Anyway, we've got four open lines because Brad's on the line, and we're going to get to him in just a second. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll go to Brad, and then we'll pick up some spots. Brad, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, how can I help you today?
I have a 2006 Ford F-150 with the 5.4 liter motor in it, and the last couple months I'm hearing when I accelerate, step on the gas, I hear almost like a sheet metal sound, or if I'm going up a hill where there's a load, I hear it almost every time, but when I let off the gas, it stops. And somebody told me that it could be a heat shield that fell down, so I went underneath the truck and I looked, and there was a heat shield that was near my front drive line. It's a four-wheel drive, and so I tried to bend it away, and then I looked at it again, and it went back down, so I went ahead and cut it off. the section where it was near my drive line, and I was wondering what you think it could be.
Well, we know it's not the shield. I would have told you to just crawl underneath there with old clothes and start kicking shields. Because, I mean, the engine's off, and you just crawl underneath there, because that's what we do. We rack them and take a rubber hammer and just start hitting things. And sooner or later, we're going to hit something, and there's going to be a resonation somewhere. So is that shield something you can put back on, you think?
No, I just went ahead and cut it off. I didn't cut the whole shield off. I just cut a section of it off.
Okay. The reason I ask you that is that heat shield is, if you park in an area where there's grass or weeds or something like that, that heat shield kind of keeps the catalytic converter from setting the ground on fire underneath you. And so that's what that shield is. So just pay particular attention. The last thing you want to do is go camping with your family and sit there with pine needles underneath your catalytic converter and start it up because it's cold and let it run for a while. That won't be good. So just pay attention to that. I can't give you the noise. I can answer the question why it's only on acceleration after I find out what it is. So that's kind of,
okay.
The question doesn't need to be answered before you figure it out. And then once you figure it out, the question's easy. You can still crawl underneath there if there's a noise associated with it. But the rattling metal to metal sound is the one that's kind of got me. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that it's pinging? The engine is pinging?
No, it's not pinging at all. I mean, it runs great, and at low speed, I don't hear nothing. But when I really step on the gas, like getting on the freeway, I can hear it just sounds like a sheet metal to me. It's like sheet metal running. I also looked at, they said it could be that I just had my bearings put in my front end.
Okay.
So they said they could have actually bent that little tin shield that, you know, goes by the brake rotor, but what I can't figure out is why it does it on acceleration. As soon as I let off the gas, it stops.
Well, fixing it by YouTube University is a bad idea because you don't know who's guessing, and you can
right.
get 15 different ideas. The idea of somebody screwing up the brakes and creating a noise, that noise would be there all the time. So it's that's not what you're describing. You're describing...
No, no,
yeah. So,
yeah.
And if that's the case, as soon as you let go of the throttle, now when you're driving down the road and you let go of the throttle, does the noise go away?
Yes.
Okay. So it's engine related. It has nothing to do with the spinning of the four wheels, right?
That's what I came to the conclusion of.
Okay. Well, then we have to figure out what on the engine it is. And so, you know, God only knows what it is, but it is something that I'm sure if you can duplicate for a shop, there's a seasoned veteran there that's going to be able to say, okay, I need to duplicate that. Maybe he puts it on the rack and gets the rear wheel spinning, that kind of stuff. But if it had to do with the four tires, the bearings, the drive shaft, it would change dramatically when you backed off the throttle, and it would be there. And if it's a wheel bearing or anything to do with the four tires on the ground, it would be there all the time. So it's difficult to assign that. But, you know, noises and vibrations are kind of tough to diagnose over the telephone. Is there any vibration related to this or not?
No.
Okay. Okay. I don't have a clue. What part of town do you live in?
I'm in Tolleson, 83rd Avenue in Lower Buckeye.
Okay. Well, 88, yeah, well, that's way far away from 88th and Bell and 88, way north. You could go to S&S Tire, which is on I-10 and Dysart, and you could just say to them, I can make this noise happen. Can I borrow one of your technicians for 10, 15 minutes? Because if you take them out and you keep them for 45 minutes, that really makes us owners mad. But if you can take him and show the noise and then switch places with him and let him drive it and make the noise, then you're going to save yourself $50, at least $50, or maybe more in diagnostic time if you can pull that off. All righty.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I wish I could help you better. Thank you very much, Brad. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Kurtz Auto Repairs, I-17 and Bell. To give you an example, and let's transition to Kurtz as far as, you know, what it is that he does. He's the kind of guy that would handle that with no problem. He's a master tech. Eric's a master tech. Jeff's a master tech. And those three guys are a hard, you can't draw to a better group of guys.
Right.
But But test driving a car for a customer is something we enjoy.
Yeah.
We don't chase our tail that way. They called it a squeak when it's really a rattle, and a squeak denotes two pieces of metal rubbing together, but if this is really a rattle, mm-hmm. and then you find out that the shroud's broken and the shroud is rattling and the fan hits it and all, you know, there's just a lot of things that can go on there. So if you're near I-17 in Bell, then Kurt's Auto Repair Northeast Corner's been around since 1987. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians, like I told you. He's been around a long time, and he's a good guy. And I remember one time a lady had been bid three or four motors from two or three different shops, and everybody said it needed a motor, and I think he fixed it for less than $100 because it had to do with an oil pressure switch that was showing zero oil pressure. So can you imagine putting a $4,000 engine in and then really putting a $40 oil pressure sensor on, knowing yeah. full well you're taking advantage of that person?
Oh, it'd make you sick. And that's like, I don't know, this story was funny to me. We had a lady come in last week, and she said, I need my car fixed or whatever. And Andy said, well, what's wrong with it? And she said, well, I don't know. Or what are you hearing or noise? Oh, just have them drive it. They'll know. And Andy goes, well, like, what are we looking for? No, just have them drive it. They'll figure it out. And she said, no, we need some kind of direction, what noise you're hearing, because for us it might be different than what you hear.
That happens a lot.
Yeah.
That happens a lot. It's an uncomfortable situation with respect to we may fix the wrong noise.
Right.
So you really have to drive it and say, there's the noise, there's the noise.
Exactly.
That's what you have to do.
Yeah.
And we've fixed the wrong noise many times,
yeah.
and that's the ugly part of it, is when you fix the wrong noise, you end up eating that repair.
Or a couple noises,
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, the lines are open. I forgot to write that down, and that didn't work out very well at all.
Nope,
sure didn't. All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to call us, if you'd like to talk about cars and stuff like that, you certainly can. It's real easy. All you have to do is give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let's go to the phones real quick, and then we're going to grab some stuff. But let's go to Ed. Ed, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
I have a 1998 4Runner. And when I go out and try to start it, I will turn the key and I hear it sounds like the click of the solenoid, but the starter motor won't turn. And sometimes it'll start right up, sometimes the starter motor won't turn at all. And I was wondering if it's a problem with the starter, could it be the problem with the switch, or is it a problem with the low voltage in the battery?
Well,
or something.
Yeah, that'll come with, yeah, I don't know. I'll tell you what I think you should do. I think the very easiest thing to do would be have you go to my website, marksalem.com, and
mm-hmm.
and click on FAQ 28. Isn't it 28?
I think so. I'd have to look it up.
No crank or something like that. But I can tell you how to diagnose this. The first thing I want you to do is, do you know where the starter's at, and is it? Can you visually see it?
Yeah, you can. If you turn the front wheel, it's on the passenger side.
Okay.
Back by the transmission.
Okay. One of the things that I would have you do is I would have you have somebody get in the truck or the 4Runner. I would make sure they set the parking brake. I'd make sure it was in park, and I would have them just click. Click, click, okay?
Right.
And I would have you beat on the starter with a hammer. So
okay.
I want you to hit it as if you're hitting a thick Coca-Cola bottle and you want to break it, but you don't want to smash it, okay?
Right.
So that's the easy thing to do, because here's the deal. How many miles are on your 4Runner?
About 198.
Okay, have you 1, ever put a starter on it?
No, I've only had it for about 20,000.
Okay. Here's what happens, and something else you can do. Now, think about this. When you hit the key, the headlights are going to be white and bright. When you activate the solenoid, there's going to be a slight dimming because the solenoid only uses 3, 4, 5, maybe 8 amps. So there's just going to be mm-hmm. an ever so barely noticeable deterioration of the white and bright headlights. When you hit the starter, it should drop the headlights to yellow. And then the minute you let go of the starter, it should pop up. So I'm betting that with your description, you're getting a solenoid click. That means we're going to have a slight dimming. But then when you hit the key or when you're holding it, it doesn't start. It doesn't crank. So you have a no-crank situation. So I'm thinking that the... Go ahead.
I was going to say, here's the thing that throws me off, is that sometimes it will crank for a few cranks and then stop.
Okay. Well,
and you try it again, and then you get clicks, clicks, clicks. Sometimes it'll crank for a couple more seconds, but before the engine catches, the starter will stop again.
Okay.
And then eventually it'll just start right up.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking the reason, I guess I got to explain it. The reason I wanted you to hammer on the starter is that the brushes at the back of the starter are spring loaded, and when they get really short, one of them won't touch. And so when it won't touch, then you hammer it, then all of a sudden the two brushes hit the armature and the thing starts and runs. And then after you do that a couple of times, you say, well, the starter's bad. And so the rest of the story will answer itself. But I'm thinking that the power is going from the key through the neutral safety switch to the solenoid. And the fact that you hear a click is good. But if you were to... you know, look at the headlights, and when the solenoid clicks, the lights dim to nothing. That could be a bad connection. That could be a bad starter that's drawn an excessive amount of amps, and that drops the headlights down. So that's why the headlights become a voltmeter, so to speak. That's really what we're looking at. We're using the headlights as a voltmeter. Do you own a voltmeter, a meter?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, what I would do is I'd take a... put the terminals on the battery, and I would expect it to be between 12.5 and 13. 13 is fully charged. 12.5 is 50% charged. So I have it on there, and then I would hit the key. Now, the solenoid should drop it very little on the voltmeter, very, very little. Mm-hmm. But the starter is going to drop it down to about 10.5 volts. So when the starter starts cranking, we're going to go to 10.5 volts. So if it goes to 9 volts or below 9 volts, the starter's no question bad, and I'll bet you dollars to donut if you hammer that old son of a gun, it'll crank over. So that's what we know that the we don't know for sure that the solenoid's activating the starter. We know that we can hear it click, but for some reason, but if you pound on the starter, that'll tell me if it's a starter or not. But in reality, you're probably going to replace the starter and the solenoid together anyway. Because it would be foolish to do one and not the other. And I think on your Toyota, you're going to figure out that they come as a package a lot cheaper as they come separately.
Okay.
So that would be my suggestion to you is FAQ, I'm pretty sure it's 28, cranks or something like that.
I didn't see it.
Okay. And look at the headlights will tell you kind of whether it's a solenoid, whether it's a bat. Now, if the headlights go to nothing... you hit the key, they're white and bright, you hit the key and the headlights go to nothing, you have a bad connection at the battery. And that won't crank the starter because I need 9.5 volts to get the starter to spin. So if you drop down to 6 because you have a bad battery connection, that tells me all I need to know. All right, good luck to you. Thank you very much, Dan. I'm going to put you on hold for just a second, and we're going to be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and sitting next to me here is my wife, Renee. And
yes, hello.
I can't hear you, and you can't hear me, I bet.
Nope. I can see your lips moving.
I know. We're just having some technical problems on my end, and that creates a problem for just about everybody. Can you talk to me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay. All righty. Anyway, we're going to go to the phones real quick and pick up Dan like we promised. Dan, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning to you. I couldn't believe my good fortune on hearing about that fellow with the F-150, the 06.
Okay.
I pulled a trailer and an ATV on the back of my F-150 up to Idaho for the eclipse, and that same noise progressively kept getting louder and louder as I would, I'm almost maxed out with the rig, and I'd go through some areas where I'd have to really push hard, and that noise started just coming in at a certain RPM. And then I back off just a hair, and it disappeared. I push back into it, get the RPM, get it under load, and it come back in again. And it just so happens at that same time, I got one of those voltage meters from Camping World, the thing puts out, or it gives a good display on what your voltage is. Voltage is fine, and then it just so happened about the same time when I'd stop and idle with the air conditioning on during the summer, it would go into yellow mode or the yellow indicator and show that it was just above 12 volts. And it, all the time before that, I'd have enough volts that it would maintain the battery voltage, but it's gotten lower now since that noise has come in. I have got 107,000 miles on that alternator, and I'm looking to replace it. And I will call back and let you know if that noise disappears.
You know what else I'd like you to do is I would like you to, before you do that, I'd like you just to gently hit the alternator case with a hammer.
Okay.
I'd be interested in knowing if the pulley is loose, or if the belt is spinning, or if there's a chatter from the spring-loaded belt tensioner.
I had all the belt tensioner and the idler all replaced just before I went on that trip.
Okay.
So they're like new, but I will double check it.
Okay. Now, the voltmeter that you have, when you're cruising down the road and everything is okay, is it pretty close to 13.8 to 14.2? Is it either side of the 14 volts?
I'm idling without the air conditioning on it. It goes from 13.9 to 14.2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's perfect. And when you're cranking, it should never drop below 9.5 or 10.
Okay.
So that's a good battery, so you can always watch that. These are numbers that we all use. It's not numbers I'm making up. Every shop in town uses these numbers. But now, what's the lowest you've seen the voltage?
12.
Okay, and that's just what we call static battery. Now, a 12.1 is 10% charged, a 12.4 is 40% charged, a 12.8 is 80% charged, and 13 is full. So if you're down at 12 volts, you're just called what we call static. So you're not charging anything at all at 12 volts.
Yes, so, it
is. Yeah. So I guess the alternator, I'd like to hear from you if the alternator does two things. If it straightens up your volt gauge and gets rid of the noise, that would be important to me.
Now, the second part of the question, when I replace the alternator, is it just the alternator only, unhook everything on the back, and then just run it through? There's no other thing other than just replacing the alternator?
No, the regulator's going to be inside the alternator.
And
all the brushes and the diode trio and stuff, but I want you to pull the negative cable and then disconnect the battery. So I don't want you to have power because... You know, the other day one of my guys was wrenching on the back of an alternator, and he hadn't disconnected the battery, and so his wrench reaches over and hits the ground, and there's a whole lot of sparks and wipes out the diodes on the alternator. So
okay.
I got to buy another one, okay?
I appreciate your help. Thank you.
You betcha. Daryl, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Great show. Hey,
thank you.
Make it quick. I've got a 2007 Toyota Tacoma. It's a V6 automatic four-wheel drive. And I'm retired, so I'm trying to do some neglected maintenance, and I've done a lot of belts, hoses, and what have you, but I'm trying to service the automatic transmission, and boy, it's an ordeal. And I think you've talked about this before online, but maybe I'm wrong.
Okay.
There's not a traditional drain and fill procedure like you would see on 95% of the cars. There's a drain plug on the bottom, and then adjacent to the transfer case down low on the transmission, there's a fill plug. I've got a service manual. You know, you can drop the pan, replace the filter. Only a couple of quarts of oil come out, and then it tells you to bring it up to operating temperature, and it tells you to use a scan tool, and it'll tell you when. And then you can drain some more fluid out and squirt some fluid in. Is there a better way, or am I missing something totally here with these transmissions?
So how are you going to add fluid through the dipstick?
Well, no, they tell you to pump it into the side, and that there's a fill port, and it's down low by the transmission.
Okay.
So then they tell you it has to be the operating temperature for everything to cycle more fluid than what is contained in the pan. I've read some on some of the forums. They say they go to these places, they hook it up to your transmission cooler lines near the front of the radiator down at the bottom, and then they cycle this stuff through and supposedly they've got a machine that can clean and refresh your fluids. I've never experienced that before.
Okay. So. Well, here's the problem that you're going to have. The problem is this. Has they ever had the filter changed by pulling the pan? Do we know there's a filter underneath the pan? Is that what your service manual says?
Yeah, yeah. I did it when I bought the truck. And again, it was all it said at that time was just replace. And it really is not even a, they call it a filter, but it really just looks like a screen. It's wide, I shouldn't say wide open. It's not a traditional filter like
a
lot of automatic transmissions.
Okay,
yeah, it's not typical.
Cotton.
It looks, right.
All right. All right. So when we.
But I did that at, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's okay. When we hook up the flush machine, we're just shoving new in and your old out. So we have two clear hoses. So the one that's going into your transmission is going to be red, nice and cherry red fluid, and the stuff that's coming out is going to be different. So we're just going to flush it until it's clean. Then we're going to use that overfill hole when we're all done. And while we're doing the flush, we're not going to rejuvenate your fluid. You're going to pay for all the fluid we're putting in. And if it,
it could
be an 8-quart system and we use 12 to get it till it ran clean, then you pay 12. But we're also going to have somebody inside the car going from park to reverse to neutral to drive to low and then back and forth. We're going to cycle all the fluid through all the valve body and through the converter. And so usually I tell people, just do the filter screen first, and then from that point on, depending on how dirty it is, at that point, we're just going to move forward and we're just going to do a flush about every 75 or 80,000 miles. Now, if you have synthetic, you can go to 100. But it might be, all of us are real familiar with what we need to do. Oftentimes, there's going to be some, like you said, a scanner that's going to tell us that, you know, we're okay on the fluid level. You wouldn't have that. But there's other ways you're going to find on the Internet that people, there's a fill hole, and chances are that there's going to be some kind of, we don't want it coming out of the fill hole, but we want you to hit the bottom of the fill hole. That's a common.
Yeah, there's an overflow indicator on the transmission, so they tell you to be careful, and this is where you drain it, and here's the overfill indicator.
Okay.
And that's what they recommend. So, okay, so just to, it sounds like I can do the filter and get it topped off with at least as much. They said just measure what you took out and put that back in, and then, so is there any place in Prescott? I live up in Prescott. Do you, any place you recommend?
No, I'm embarrassed to tell you I've tried to find somebody in Prescott, and I can't. I would like to spread my wings, but if you come down the I-17, there's Tom at Deer Valley and I-17 northwest corner, and then at Bell and I-17 is Kurtz on the northeast corner, and both of those guys are well-qualified and well-seasoned, and both of them have gray hair, and both of them are master technicians. They know how to handle your Toyota. Now,
my daughter lives at 83rd and Cactus. Is there someplace close there?
You can go to Automotive Dynamics on Grand and 99th Avenue, or you can go to Thunderbird Auto at 88th Avenue and T-Bird.
Okay.
And so those guys are in that particular area as well. And you're going to, before you leave, you're going to, you know, ask them, and they're going to give you a range because they don't know how long it's going to take and how much fluid it's going to take. But you're on a transmission flush, you're going to be in the $200 to $300 range.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
And especially if it's got synthetic fluid in it.
Right.
And so it'll just depend on what it calls for. And if it takes just regular Dextron or ATF, an easy one.
Yeah,
it takes Toyota type. S or AS. It's some funky fluid that you can only seems like I can only ever find it as a dealer.
No, that's what they want you to believe. The fact of the matter is if Toyota used to say you had to use Toyota oil filters, Eureka used to say you have to use our vacuum bags. There's a federal law. It's called the Magnuson-Moss Act, and it says if you must use the proprietary whatever on your vacuum bags or a Toyota, you have to provide it for free. And so Valvoline Max Life is something I would probably look at. And Valvoline Max Life has a chart, and if you can find your Toyota in there, then it's certified that Valvoline's Max Life will fit in your Toyota. And frankly, that's probably what we'd put in it.
Yeah.
All righty.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Vinver.
You betcha. Speaking of transmissions, Automatic Transmission Exchange is on 40th Street in Washington. He's been around since 1968. Phil and his staff are really good guys with respect to transmissions. They know how to fix transmissions, and they're kind of guys that will drive. If you can duplicate the problem, then they'll go with you. But they're not going to let you drive to Lake Pleasant and back. That's not going to happen. But you get the problem, or you point out that the leak is right here below the rearview mirror, right in the middle of the car. that's the kind of customer that saves a lot of diagnostic process. But Phil's been around a long time. He's capable of small leaks, transmission services, and all the way to the overhauls. And he was around when transmission automatics were first there. As a result of that, he's very skilled on the newer model transmissions because all we're doing is using electronic solenoids to redirect fluid and pressure, where before we used manual valves to do it. So the transmission is still the same. We're just shifting your car electronically. So 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the road. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Jeff, I'm going to get your question, but I'll probably take you on the other side of the break, but go right ahead.
Yeah, I got an older model Chevy Tahoe, dropped the 383 stroker crate motor in it, and I did an oil change, and I put 5W30, and I looked at the manual. It says 10W30. Do I have a concern?
No. No, and let me just explain real quick. I want you to put the palms of your hands together, and this is new technology. We're putting 0-20 in some cars today. So you put your hands together, and you flap them real fast, and you can create the heat in between the palms of your hands. So you rub them real fast. Now, I want to ask you, if you want to carry away the heat, provide lubrication, and carry away the trash, are you better off with peanut butter or water or sewing machine oil? And obviously the answer is sewing machine oil or water.
Oil, right.
So
right.
The thinner oil gives you better wear and tear. I mean, it reduces wear and tear a lot because it's in there faster. And it also goes through the joint faster. We don't want peanut butter to stay there forever. So that's the real problem that we have is we're moving towards 0-20. And then they tell us they're going to come out with an 8 and a 12 oil. And these are backward compatible in many cases, except the oil burners and the oil leakers. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be able to pull that off.
So should he can just use that for the first, till the first oil change, and then maybe go to whatever it called for?
He could if that was his comfort zone.
Yeah.
If I were in that thing, I'd be using the 530.
Right.
And I would use it year round.
Okay.
And here's the deal. The low number means it flows like a 5-weight when it's cold. So chances are of you using it as a 5-weight in Phoenix are slim and none.
None. Right.
And so it flows like a 30-weight when it's hot.
Right.
So it's a flows like. It doesn't change viscosity, so to speak, but it flows like a 5 and like a 30. So if you do go hunting, if you go up north, this is going to be all right for you.
Okay. Thanks.
All right? You betcha. All righty. And we're going to talk about Larry Harker's Auto real quick. He's been around since 1967. Bob and Ellen own Larry Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. If you live in that area, Larry Harker's would be a great place to go. And let me tell you about Bob. He's one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met. The guy is a wizard. He's probably better than I am with the diagnostic process. And there's been times I've sent people to him, and the story is I've had my car to 15 different places, and nobody can fix this, and he did. And there was a gentleman with a Dodge pickup that had never got it fixed and had spent thousands of dollars having people guess, and Bob fixed it. So if you've got a problem, it's worth 38th Avenue and Indian School, I promise you, and have Bob take a look at it. But everything from oil changes to diagnostics, Bob and Ellen can handle that. Ellen runs the front counter, Bob runs the shop, and like I said, he's really, really good. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in about 4 minutes taking your calls.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Good afternoon, everybody, or good morning, whatever it is in your time zone. 602-508-0960 is the phone number, 602-508-0960. And if you'd like to join us, you certainly can. And that's all you have to do, 602-508-0960. Okay, we're going to do some real quick business, and then we're going to go to the phones. S&S Tire is in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. S&S Tire is on the second generation, as many of our shop owners that we're finding today are. Their dad started it, and then Dan and,
don't put me on the spot.
I know. Dan and his brother, and It just slipped my mind, they both know how to run shops, and they're very, very good at what they do. And more important than anything else, that they've absorbed the honesty and the integrity of their father. So they're really good at what they do. one of the things they really do well is that you can go in and say, I'd like you to look at my tires and give me three prices for four tires, and I can write the check before you even start. So I'd like good, better, best. So if you're going to turn in your car and it's on lease, maybe you don't want to put the best tires on there. Or maybe you do want to put the best tires, or maybe you want the middle of the road. But anything from wheelbarrows to tractor tires, they've got your tire. So that's S&S Tire, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. Gina, you're up first. How can I help you today?
Hi, great. Thanks. Okay, differential fluid flush. Should I get it or not? I mean, this is basically a maintenance thing. I just hear about it. It's like, well, you know, it hasn't had in 20 years. Maybe I should get it. I just don't want to mess things up that ain't broken. You know, if it ain't broken, don't fix it. Well, sometimes I hear it when I make a sharp right turn. That's about it. So should I flush or not flush?
Well, it's not really a flush on a differential. It's a drain and refill. So we're going to actually drain and refill your transmission, and that the easiest part of that is just simply, what kind of car or truck are we talking about?
It's an 89 Chevy Blazer.
Okay, so it's going to have a cover on the back of it. So we're going to take the cover off, and all the fluid's going to dump out. It's going to give us a chance to look at the pattern on the teeth of the ring and pinion. It's also going to give us a really good idea of if it's shed metal, and normal differential shed metal, it's the amount of metal that the seasoned guys know what to do. Then we're going to put a new gasket, bolt up the cover, then there's a hole in the side, and we're going to fill it with gear lube until it starts to come out, and then we're going to stop. How many miles on your car or truck?
120.
Okay.
Truck.
And you've never done a differential service?
No, I've had it for 20 years, and I haven't done anything like that.
Okay. Well, if I were you, I'd have it done, and you can call around and just tell them, I've got a rear-wheel drive GM. And I'm asked, you know, what will it cause for a differential service? And I assume that you're going to pull the cover off the back. Now, some guys are going to stick a straw in the fill hole and suck all the fluid out. That's okay. That's going to be cheaper. And they'll look at the fluid and say, you know, it looks good, or it looks worn, or it looks really bad. I think it's a better idea to pull the cover off of it so I can look inside. I want to see how the teeth are meshing, and I want to look how much metal it's shed based on that you've been around the world four times. So I'm more happy doing it that way, but if you want me to do just what we call a suck and fill, then, yeah, just stick a straw down in there, turn on the machine, suck out all the old fluid, put it in, and now you're probably in the vicinity of $75 to $85, I'm guessing. So that you've got those two choices. I would think you would do the first, you'd take the cover off so you could see everything, and then maybe if everything was okay, then the next time you did a service, which is going to be another 80 to 100,000 miles, maybe at that point you pull the cover off, or you can do a straw suck and fill because you've already done the cover the first time. So those are your options, okay?
Okay, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. And a service differential, I take notes on all you guys. Wayne, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, I need your help, Mark. Okay. I've got a 2001 Toyota MR2. It's pristine. Got 60,000 miles on it. The engine light went on. Took it to the guy that is a certified Toyota Lexus guy. And long and short, he said, we got to replace the canisters. I said, oh, I don't know what that is, but okay. So that's done. That's $675. About a week later, the light comes on again. So I bring it back, and he looks at it, and he has diagnostics equipment, by the way. So he comes back, and he says, now my mind as an old guy, you can open and close valves. What is that?
Purge valve?
What is that?
Is he talking about
purge valve?
I'm
sorry, it's not a valve. You guys have been mentioning it all day and stuff. Anyway, bottom line is, that's replaced. So now we're closing in at 800. And then I'm saying, you know what? Arizona law says I can take my car in within 90 days of the license coming due, and I can do, and I can get the inspection done. So I'm driving to the inspection. I am half a mile away, and the light comes on again.
Okay.
So I'm going to take it back, but Mike, you know, what I'm concerned about is this, and there's no great answer for what I'm going to ask you, but I'll get your opinion.
Okay.
Do I take it back to the guy that has worked on my car for 4 years who is certified Toyota Lexus? Do I go to some other guy who's going to start all over and do the diagnostics again and charge me a hell of a lot more money? What do you think I should do?
I can't believe for the life of me why you're so kind about this. I can't believe that you've let him guess twice. Clearly, mm-hmm. both of them were guesses. If that guy worked for me, he'd be put on probation. And then you talk about him being Toyota certified, which gives him godlike skills. Well, he's not exhibiting his godlike skills. There's no question about that. For whatever reason, he's struggling. He probably doesn't have, and everybody's got a scanner, but do you have a smoke machine? And do you know what the smoke machine does? And do you know how to use it? And what kind of information is you getting? Are you pulling vacuum on the fuel tank? Or is the sensor that's supposed to tell the computer, I see vacuum, is that sensor bad? So you have to determine which one it is. So we're going to suck the fumes off the tank and burn them through the engine. But in order for the computer to know that the valve is open, then there's a sensor that says, oh, I don't see pressure anymore. I see vacuum. And I'm simplifying everything to make my point.
Is it the same code every time? Or we don't know?
Well, you know what? It was kind of crazy. I still went to the emissions place because I said, well, maybe there's something stupid, not important. It failed.
Well,
so then they give you a code, but the code is kind of meaningless is what I've been told. Like, it's a generic code that could do thousands of things. So what I'm wondering, guys, bottom line, not to take up all of your time, is this. I'm in surprise. Where do I take a car, an MR2, not a Chevy or Ford that a lot of people can work on?
Knock it off. Your car uses injectors. It uses crankshaft sensors. It uses gasoline. It uses air. It has mass airflow sensor. It has spark plugs, just like the cheapest Fiat in the whole wide world. So it's fundamentals. If you go someplace else, you're going to have to go back to him, and you're going to have to say, I'm $800 down, buddy. This guy fixed it. I've got 30 days behind it, and he's fixed it. Here's his old part. Now, I'll bet you didn't ask for the old parts, did you?
Of course, I wouldn't know to do that.
Okay. Well, if you did, you could go back to him and say, I've got 30 days. He fixed it. Here's his repair order. With all due respect, clearly you didn't. So here's my old canister, and here's my old whatever else. I'd like you to put those back on, and I would like you to give me a credit. But I want to tell you something. If that guy clearly doesn't have the skills or the talent that you think he does, and he doesn't have the skills or the talent that I know he should have in order to be doing this job. And so I'm not going to put him on that presidential, well, that's a bad word in this climate today. I'm not going to put him in that godlike position of knowing, you know, all about Toyotas, because clearly he doesn't. Now, he could have easily fixed your car, then go drive it and watch what's going on. He could have clearly see if the monitor reset in it. You can't have a light. Then what you do is you disconnect the battery and you think you're going to sail through emissions. That is not going to happen, because in the middle of we fixed it to the middle of emission test is available, it's called a monitor. And the computer wants to see the engine go through a series of stop, go, fast, slow, left turn, right turn, how many times we start it. It's called heat cycles, how many times do we get hot, how many times did it get cold. So there's no fooling the emissions anymore. So you have to be able to have the monitor reset, which shows success, and then you go through emissions. In his case, the light came on, and the monitor never reset. So he never kicked this problem's butt, ever. So I would, if you're going to go up north, give me, where are you at again?
Let's say real simply, Bell and Grand.
Okay, I'd go to Thunderbird Auto, 88th Avenue in Thunderbird.
Thunder Auto.
Yeah, and it's called Thunderbird Auto.
Yeah.
88th Avenue and Thunderbird. I'd go him. And tell Tom, Mark Salem says he doesn't have a chance in hell that he's going to be able to fix your MR2. And watch the veins in his neck pop. So, and tell him, I've taken it to a Toyota expert. This is called waving the flag in front of the bull. Okay? I've taken it to an expert in a Toyota guy, and he replaced a canister, and he replaced that, and here's his two bills. So, Mark Salem says you're not going to be able to fix this, but I thought I'd give you a try. And if his, the veins aren't popping out of his neck by the time you're done telling him that, I know what's going to happen. He has my cell phone. He's going to call me 2 minutes later, and he goes, and he's going to use bad words. But that's okay. He's the best guy in your area to pull this off. Alrighty, thank you very much, Wayne. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Real quick, let me tell you about Strictly Diesel. Nate at Strictly Diesel is one of the finest diesel technicians that I've ever met. He really is a very calm guy, unlike me sometimes. He's really very knowledgeable, and he works on light duties, Dodges, Fords, and Chevrolets. So he does some imports, but again, light duties. He doesn't do the big trucks. So he's at I-17 at Pinnacle Peak. He's been around a long time. You can go to their website and look at all their parts because they have performance parts if you want cold air kits and stuff like that. But Nate really is a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shop. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, I-17 at Pinnacle Peak Road. We'll be back.
Mark Levin explains what's legal and illegal.
There's lots of things that are legal that may influence the outcome of a campaign that may make a candidate look positive. Everything's not illegal. And a non-disclosure agreement paid with private funds is not illegal. Matter of fact, it's done every damn day in this country. It's been done by the Southern District of New York.
But they call it hush money when it comes to Trump.
Oh, hush money.
Mark Levin, weeknights at 9 on Intelligent Talk 960, The Patriot.
Hello, I'm Greg May, owner of Phoenix Body Works. For 35 years, we've been demonstrating our workmanship, our honesty, our integrity, and our exceptional customer service. We are blessed to have so many repeat customers who refer their friends and family. We have ethical, loyal technicians who have been with us for years. They are ICAR certified, which means they are up to date on the latest technology and techniques, so your repairs meet or exceed industry standards. Our technicians are truly part of our family. We are very capable of fixing your car. We pull off damaged parts. We pull your frame and body mounts back to where they should be. Then we install the new parts. We align both the front and rear end. Then your car is back to the way it was when new. Our customers come from all over the valley. I'm Greg May. Remember, it's your vehicle. You pick the shop, not the insurance company. Phoenix Body Works, we want to be your collision repair specialist. Call us, 623-582-1434, Monday through Friday, 9 to noon on Saturday.
Are you ready to get in, get out, and get paid flipping houses in the Phoenix area? If so, here's an amazing opportunity for you. The NV Real Estate Academy has created a three-step paper flip strategy that allows you to write an offer, sell the offer, and get paid. With this strategy, you'll learn how to flip a house without swinging a hammer or using any of your own cash or credit. Now, for a limited time, the NV Real Estate Academy would like to share this strategy with you for free. Call 1-800-989-2790 94 right now to get your free Hidden Treasures in Wholesaling Property Kit and find out how to get paid writing offers. Call 800-989-2794 now, and the NV Real Estate Academy will also give you 4 free tickets to a training workshop that also includes a free smartwatch and Nick Fertucci's new book, 7-Figure Decisions. All these gifts are free just for attending. Call 800-989-2794. That's 800-989-2794.
Vision loss is not something that you feel until it happens.
Most people lose their vision from diseases like macular degeneration and glaucoma, not at birth.
With macular degeneration, you lose your central vision.
You have a blind spot right in the center of your face, so I can't actually see your face.
So even that little circle in which I could see became a big blur.
I was 65 when I first was diagnosed with glaucoma.
There were no symptoms. I had no headaches.
3 million Americans have glaucoma, and half don't even know it.
11 million people in the United States have macular degeneration.
You lose mobility, independence, changes your entire life.
So many eye disorders can be treated if caught early.
My husband tells me that I have beautiful brown eyes, and I don't want to lose that.
Make a plan today to get your eyes checked.
Visit brightfocus.org to learn more.
You don't need to get a second job as a stuntman to save money.
We need a new stuntman!
You just need feedthepig.org. Don't get left behind. Get tips and tools at feedthepig.org. Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
A station exposing the lack of transparency in the media today. To hold the truth accountable. 960 The Patriot. Where truth matters.
My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife and partner in car repair for 39 years, going on 40. In January, it'll be 40 years.
Yep. In this, yeah.
And then we've been married just a little longer than that. I'm not allowed to tell you. But nevertheless.
We got married young, right?
Yeah, we both married when we were 10. Yeah. Okay. Let me tell you about Action Auto Repair real quick. Action's at I-17 in Deer Valley. He's a full-service, family-owned operation. Tom runs it. He's been in business since 1983. I first met Tom before that in the early 80s. I was impressed with him then and all the way till now. I know he's honest. I know he's a good technician, and I know he hires good technicians. And the sin of a car repair shop is guessing with your money. And that's the reason why I teach people, when a car shop calls you, you say to them, I understand your diagnosis, and you tell me I need a starter, but I need to know if this is a guess or a fix. And if it's a guess, whose money are we guessing, yours or mine? And you hold them to that fire. You hold their feet to the fire. Tom knows that. And it's really easy for those of us that have been in this business a long time to understand the importance of having the conversation with a customer about guessing and fixing. So you don't have to worry about that with Tom. He'll have that conversation if he needs to. Otherwise, no conversation. He's firm about his diagnosis, like the rest of us. But anyway, Action Auto Repair, northwest corner of I-17 in Deer Valley. Gene, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Go ahead. Happy birthday, Papa.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
Oh, who am I speaking to?
Nana.
Yeah.
No, that's Josie. She's 3 years old.
Josie.
And her daughter Andy runs our operation.
Yep.
And then she's our youngest girl. And she tricked me by using the word Jean because her name is Josie Jean. She's
that's
named
right.
after both of her grandmothers. So Josie, Nana and Papa love you, okay?
Hey. Love you.
All right.
See you
we'll
in a little bit.
Yeah, we'll see you in a little bit. We're going to have a big birthday party. Alan's wife, it's her birthday, and then it's my birthday. So, and I'm going to be like 41, aren't I?
Yeah.
Something
you
like that.
Keep forgetting how old you are.
All righty. Josie, we love you, baby. And Sam, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi. I've got a question about the flywheel on automatic transmission.
Okay.
Like a 153 tooth versus a 168. This is for a small block Chevy. If you don't have the right flywheel, what will happen?
The starter won't work.
Okay,
it has everything to do with
won't work.
Yeah, because if the and first of all, let's use the right terminology. Let's call it a flex plate, okay?
Okay.
Okay, cuz right. that's what it is a flex plate. And here's the problem. You slide your starter into the block mount. You don't even need the transmission on there. But when you put the flex plate on, if it's too big, the teeth will interfere with the starter. If it's too small, then the teeth from the starter will never engage the flex plate teeth. So
okay,
Go ahead.
I'm going to say, is that a 168 tooth? Is it bigger diameter or?
The more teeth is the bigger diameter.
Okay.
Now, if I'm wrong, you should be able to buy both of them and overlay the both of them. And if I'm wrong, then you have to match the starter teeth. So I would, if you're going to buy a flex plate, it's easy enough to buy, but I would probably take the starter motor with you and make sure that the starter motor's teeth are not fine, but the starter motor gear is wide. So that's that. Now, why can't you just use the flywheel or the flex plate that came off of the motor and the transmission? Why can't you just use that again?
Well, I've had this problem with the starter, and I've called you on it before about the teeth meshing on a prior starter that I had about a year, and it went out. And so I checked what the wear pattern was, and it was like two-thirds or three-fourths into the teeth. So I thought, well, I need to add a shim or two to get it further away. So I did that, but I still get the same noise. The car will crank. It's in a 65 Chevy El Camino, okay. Power Glide, and 153 teeth. It'll crank. Sometimes when you go to start it, it hits like the drive hits, and then it doesn't engage, and then it'll crank and make a bunch of noise, and then it'll start.
Okay, that sure sounds like it's way too tight. How many shims did you put in it?
I've got at least four, maybe five shims in there.
Okay. Then we have to. And has this problem existed ever since you put this in?
Well, it existed before.
Okay.
And that had started to go out about 3 or 4 years ago, and I just got a used one off a friend of mine, and did the same thing, and it worked for about a year, and then the housing cracked.
Okay.
Well, the other starter that I put in about a year ago, the same thing happened. It had a crack in the housing again.
Okay. Well, what part of town do you live in?
I'm at 43rd Avenue and Olive.
Okay. Have you got a pencil handy?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to give you the name of a bunch of guys that can help you with this.
Okay.
But they're going to have to see the vehicle. You can go to Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob's an old race car guy. He'll help you. I know he can fix it. I know Billy at 25th Street Automotive. He's an old drag racer. I know he can fix it. If you want to go north, then Tom Blackwell, he's a good friend of mine. He's ornery as all get out. But he could fix it too. Those are the guys that could pull this off. It really has to do with bluing up the teeth and matching the teeth to the flywheel, to the teeth, to the starter. By chance, do you know what the starter number you're using is?
Oh, gosh, I forget. It's like a 36, 64 or something like that.
3610?
Maybe it's 3610. I don't remember.
All right, well, use the small block Chevys. But you said you had a 383, but that's still a small block Chevy that's just been poked, right?
No, it's only a 350.
Oh, okay, well then.
It's only a 350, okay. And it's a block mount, one bolt shorter than the other.
Yes.
Block mount starter, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I would take it over there, and or you can go to Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th Street in Washington. All those guys know what to do. And what you're describing is the fact that it's gnashing the teeth when you go to fire it, and it won't release the teeth, and now you have wear on the teeth. It's either got the wrong starter, the wrong flywheel, or we need to reshim something. We need to take some shims out. But see, it doesn't make sense to me, because if you got a bunch of shims in there and you're still clashing teeth, it's probably not a shim issue. So in that particular case, then I would be going with you, a flywheel or a starter. But I think it's 3510 is your starter. I could be wrong, but I'm just trying to work off memory. And
what was that number?
3510.
A 3510, not a 3610?
Oh, 3610. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, 3610. So I think if you look at the parts book and you go to the parts store, everything... Every small block Chevy, all through the 70s and probably the 80s, the 3610 was the starter. It's just the starter for the small block Chevy during that time frame.
So, all right. What kind of price would they charge me for this?
I have no idea. They're going to tell you, you know, it's this much. It's going to be between this and this. They're all going to give you ranges. But I got to run because I got 10 seconds to go. But those guys could fix this up. 602-508-0960. We got Bob next, and we'll be back right after this.
All about that demon.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and I guess I should just bring my headphones up here just a little bit so I can hear myself. Nevertheless, let me tell you real quick about Auto Dynamics. He's one of the largest and most trusted service centers in the Sun City area. He's been around a very long time, since 1982. Again, they're on their second generation. Chuck Nyday opened it, and Derek Nyday is now running it. And if the truth be known, Derek's a little better businessman than Chuck is. I think he would be proud that I said that. So Automotive Dynamics has great staff, great mechanics, and Derek is trying something that's kind of new, and I'm impressed that he's trying this. His mechanics are not paid a commission or a percentage of your repair bill, and therefore he doesn't have to spend all the staff and all the time to ensure that they're not selling unnecessary parts or repairs. So if you're looking for a great shop in the Sun City area, may I recommend Automotive Dynamics on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Bob, you're up next. I'm sorry it took so long to get to you, but you got the floor.
Okay, thanks so much. Hey, I've got a 2015 Jeep Cherokee Latitude, and 2 months ago I gave in to my wife and decided to turn on the navigation system.
Okay.
It worked pretty good for about a month, and then a month and a half, and then on our way from Iowa to here, it crapped out to the point where it thinks it's in Des Moines, Iowa, and the compass keeps on going around in circles. I called up the customer service, and they said drive in a circle 10 times counterclockwise and that should cure the problem. Well, it didn't. You got any ideas?
Yeah, I want you to follow the procedure exactly like the manual says. And there's going to be a procedure in your manual that's going to tell you how to recenter the compass and find north. And typically, they're right, but there's a lot more to it than just going out there and doing circles and hoping some policeman doesn't stop you for being looking like you're an idiot. But I know that all of our cars have that same thing. Now, if you do exactly what the manual says and you just go into the area of the compass, if you do exactly what the manual says and it doesn't fix it, then you're going to go back to the dealer and say, this didn't fix it. And
okay.
There's probably a software update that's related to that.
Okay.
So we normally see that on a regular basis. Now, my wife's Ford, not too long ago, and it's called the F car in our family. Did you have something to
fantastic
say?
Fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic. I got your fantastic.
You're talking about one of those found on road dead.
Ah, yeah. It's the first Ford in my family in like 250 years. So it was a day I was home and I was sicker than heck, and her and my daughter-in-law went out and both bought Fords.
That's right.
Anyway, in her case, she had an intermittent rear backup camera. And I mean to tell you, we did everything imaginable. We cleaned the connections, and it would intermittently not work, and sometimes it would work fine for days. So finally, we couldn't figure it out. But we did know this, that the neutral safety switch was telling the computer that we were going into reverse, and we knew that the computer was telling the camera to come on. So we could find that signal. We knew it wasn't a neutral safety switch. Because unless the neutral safety switch tells the computer it's in reverse, then it doesn't know to turn on the back. So we put the camera in it. I don't remember how much that was. Do you remember? A couple $100?
Yeah, I want
to
say.
$200 to $300?
Yeah, $200 to $300, I think.
$200 to $300. And we stuck it in there, and it's been fine ever since.
Okay.
And we put up with that for a long time, and consider that I own a repair shop. We put up with it for a long time because I wanted to be able to hone in on what it was, because it could have been the PCM and it could be a lot of other things. So in your particular case, the very best thing I can offer you is go do the compass recertification exactly like the manual says. Now, it could be something silly like honk the horn twice and wave a dead chicken around your head, but it's not going to be as simple as just driving the circle 10 times. And
okay, I looked in the owner's manual, and I couldn't find anything there for it. Which manual are you talking about?
The owner's manual.
It's in the owner's manual for compass recirculation. Okay,
yeah.
I'll try
right.
that. Thanks
right.
so much.
You betcha. Thank you very much. Dale, you're up next. How can I help you?
I don't know if this is a generic or vehicle specific problem, but I'll tell you the vehicle, even though I know I've become an object of derision.
Okay.
It's a 2001 Ford Ranger with a 2.3-liter four.
Okay.
The problem is I had to reset the computer after doing a repair, and the drive cycle for this is, well, let's put it this way. I put on over 250 miles since I did the reset on all kinds of driving, and I'm still coming up with the EGR as not ready. It's not throwing toads. It's driving better than it's ever driven since I bought it 7 years ago. But it's not coming ready, and I'm worried that when I get down to the smog control, they'll look at it and say, nope, can't do it.
Well, they're not going to let you come in if you have a code. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. It is not throwing code. All it's doing is I've got one of those little plug-ins for the diagnostic connector.
Yeah.
And a program for my tablet that shows me the current state of all of the pieces.
Okay.
And everything shows ready now except EGR and evaporative.
Okay.
And like I say, I've been ordinarily those will all clear if I drive it for about 70 or 80 miles. So where do I look?
Well, you're asking me to diagnose it through your eyes, and what you're saying to me is completely foreign to me. I don't know anything about an iPad. I don't know anything about some trouble issues without a code, in spite of the fact that this car is 17 years old. So it's OBD1, more than likely it's OBD1, and then we have OBD2 now. So I'm trying to grasp, you know, there's a couple of things. There should be no trouble codes, no trouble issues, no trouble messages on your PCM. And I don't know how, if you have some trouble, and whether you call it a code or not, you've got some trouble coming up on whatever you're using, then the monitors shouldn't have reset. And so you're telling me on one hand that the monitors have reset. On the other hand, you have this problem that you're getting on your laptop. If that's the case and check engine light's not on and the monitors are reset, then go down and see if it'll pass. If it doesn't pass, then ask them why it doesn't pass. And I'm probably pretty sure, I've been wrong before, that they're going to tell you that it didn't pass because it has trouble codes. Now, I don't know how you have trouble codes with monitors that are clear, because they go hand in hand. But if what you're telling me is the truth, to the best of your electronic ability, then and the monitors have reset and you can see that, and then you don't have a check engine light on and you know the check engine light works, go down there and see what happens. That's what I'd do. Anyway, I got to run. Thank you very much, Dale. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute.
Most Friday nights I can be found.
Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Satum. We're here every Saturday. And I'm going to go back real quick before I get to Jim. And I'm going to go back and find the guy with the flywheel starter issue, Sam, if you're listening. I have it from the authority on transmissions, a guy that knows more about transmissions than I'll ever know, even if I live to be 200 years old. He says, tell your small block Chevy guy that he should use 168 tooth flywheel with no weights. So, there's flywheel with weights that balance, and then there's flywheel with no weights that don't need balance. So he's saying you need 168 teeth and no weights. So that's the way I interpret his message, but I got the 168 in there for sure, Sam. So if you're wondering about the two flywheel, according to Alger, who's one of the best transmission guys I've ever met in my life and well-versed on the older model cars, he's saying 168. So see what happens. Let's go to the phones. Jim, I've got you. What can I do for you?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Last spring, I decided to put my 2008 Subaru out back in storage, and the battery was nicely charged. So I hooked up a flow charger to it, and during the summer, I checked it periodically. I'd open the car door, and the interior lights went on nice and bright, and I figured that was a good sign. But last week, I disconnected the flow charger, got in the car, put the key in the ignition, turned the key, and bam, the battery exploded. What would cause that?
Well, there's a spark somewhere, either inside, and let me ask you this so people understand. That's probably the loudest explosion you've ever been adjacent to, isn't it?
It's a good thing I was wearing my Depends.
You're exactly right. I got to tell you, there's been times in my shop where we've created a spark on top of a battery that's gassing, and the explosion feels like a semi just hit the main part of the building at 80 miles an hour. It is now, I hope you got the hose out immediately and washed everything down as fast as you could. Hopefully.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Good. All right, so you had a spark either inside the battery or outside the battery. Let me poke some holes in what you're thinking. The trickle charger was right. Did it blow the caps off, or did it blow the whole top of the battery off?
It was a sealed battery. It blew what were the caps, blew them off, and blew four holes in the battery case itself.
Okay. More than likely, the explosion occurred within. So it's because of the explosion of the battery, but there's no guarantee of that. We have a spark either on top of the battery or inside the battery. That's all there is to it. The fact that the light came on doesn't mean anything, because the light needs a half an amp, and you know the battery at eight volts, 9 volts, 10 volts can pop the light on. So that's not it. When you hit the key, you said to this battery, "Give me all you got." And when it charged up to give you all it's got, it blew up. So I think what you do is go back with a good battery, put it in there, and then this is what I want you to try. I want you to plug in your battery maintenance device, and I want you to let it sit for 3 or 4 days. I want you to – do you have a voltmeter by chance?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Go hit the two terminals, and under the best of conditions, you're going to be pretty close to 13 volts, okay? Then I want you to take off your battery tender and let it sit for a couple of days, and you better have pretty close to the same voltage. Now, if it was if my number one battery was a sealed battery, then you're not allowed to put water in it. But a spark underwater is not a spark. So sometimes what happens is even though they say sealed, you can tip them sideways and you can see the water level is well below the plate. So then we just unscrew those stupid caps, pull the label off the top, unscrew the cap and put some distilled water or just regular water in it. So like I said, a spark underwater is not a spark. So it could have easily been something that caused it to drop in voltage or drop in. If you overcharge it, it's going to consume electrolyte. And so that's when you start dropping the down below the plates and the plates spark and it blows up. The other thing I want you to do is when it's running, I don't want to see anything more than 14.5. So when you start it up, remember we're doing these voltage tests, you're going to hold the idle up high or have your wife hold the idle up kind of high, and I don't want to see anything more than 14.5. And if you see something in the 15 range, then you have a problem with the alternator and regulator. And we're boiling the water out of the battery. That's what's happening. Okay?
Is it possible the float charger was defective and it overcharged the battery?
It's not likely. And let me change your question. Mark, have you ever seen a tender go crazy? No. I've seen them work and not work. And trust me, I have, up at the ranch, I probably have 4 tenders running on a bunch of my farm equipment, my excavators and my tractors and my bobcats and my high lift and stuff like that. So I haven't never had any problems in the last 10 years with 4 or 5. And then I have a tender on my Polaris and my Honda quad that I use to go round up horses sometimes. So I've never seen a bad tender, never.
Okay,
I mean, I've seen them bad when they quit working, but I've never seen one overcharge anything.
So for some reason, the electrolyte level went down.
Yeah, it could have been at the very beginning, but that's why I want you to check the battery. After a couple of days, I want you to check the battery, because if it's up there north of 14.5, then the tender is bad. I don't want it to charge more than 14.5, and then when you take it off, it's going to be about 14, and those are the two numbers I want to see.
Well, I've already put a new battery in it, and everything is working fine.
Okay.
But I will check. I don't want to use the float charger again without testing it as you've asked me to. So good.
And let me change my numbers. I'm wrong. I want you to write down this 13.5 and 13. I don't know where I got the 14.5, but when we charge a battery, we might go up to 14 volts. Man, we might go up to that's a high idle alternator running wide open. So that's 14.
I was under the impression that a float charger maintained the voltage at which it was when it was hooked up, and it wouldn't take it above that. It's not a charger; it's just a maintainer.
I understand, but we need to maintain it at 13 volts.
Okay.
That's fully charged. So we didn't know that for years and years and years. But like I said, everybody agrees today, 12.1 is 10%, 12.5 is 50%, and 13 is 100%.
Okay.
So it's not uncommon for me to hook up a battery that has 12.2 volts in it and go back, and I'm going to use it, so I'll stick it with my voltmeter, and it has 13 with the 10 drawth of it. So I've brought it up from a low 12 to a 13. I'm pretty happy about that. So it's not going to maintain it, because if you plug it in and it's 12.1, maintaining 12.1 is not a good idea.
Okay.
Well, all righty.
Thank you for the education.
Okay, Jim, thank you very much. Had a lot of good information, and as with most of us guys, we know how to say yes and no, but few of us know how to say I don't know. and the I don't know comes from the ladies at the front counter of the auto repair shop, because you ask them a question and at the appropriate time they say I don't know. But you can interview 100 guys at the front counter. And especially if you ask them a question about what's the compression ratio on your car, they'll throw something at you. And I make fun of the difference between men and women, because in my industry there is a significant difference. When we talk about men and women, women will make the noise in the lobby full of people, and guys won't. Guys will describe the noise, but most of the time the noise is different to them than it is to us. So vibrations are different. The women will ask them questions. Does it shake the seat of your pants? Does it shake the steering wheel? Does it shake the passenger side front seat? There is specific reasons we ask that. If it shakes just the steering wheel, the vibrations in the front end of the car. If it shakes just your butt, then the vibrations in the back of the car. If it shakes the seat next to the driver and the steering wheel, then we got a vibration throughout the car. So that helps us diagnose it. So the few minutes you spend at the front counter with questions and answers, then that's really good time, because it's going to save you diagnostic time. Don't let anybody sell you anything before you check the owner's manual. There's a lot of repair shops. First of all, let me tell you that the repairs industry is suffering because in the last 3, 4, 5 years, the cars that came out before this problem, everybody had a 30, a 60, a 90 maintenance stop. Virtually every car and truck out there had a slew of stuff that needed to be done at 30, 60, and 90. Today, it's all gone to 75 to 100. We have very few stops. We might have a fuel filter stop between 0 and 80 or 90,000 miles. So we've lost all of this maintenance because the car comes with synthetic transmission fluid, synthetic differential fluid, synthetic engine oil. It's got spark plugs that go 110,000 miles. The battery will go. The alternator is some more sophisticated. We have all this going on. So you can imagine if you were like me and you owned an auto repair shop, and you saw sales falling, you might decide that you want to start selling people something that you know that doesn't fit within the parameters of their owner's manual. It's not uncommon for people to tell me that they have a 2-year-old car and the shop's telling them they need to change their fluid and their transmission at 35. And I ask them to look at the owner's manual, and that's not what it says. And then sometimes I'll hear this. I'll hear, well, the service writer said that the owner's manual is not written for Arizona. Okay, so the service manual is not written for Arizona. So this is what you say when you hear that. You put on your smile and you say, you know, I didn't know that. Why don't you order me an Arizona owner manual and I'll come and pick it up? Because there's no such animal. So he's either not going to call you back, he or she, the service writer you're talking to at a chain store, at an independent repair shop, or at a dealership. I don't care. This happens across the board. So the service writer is going to say, okay, and he's not going to call you back, him, he or she, or they'll call you back and say, oh, we're out of them. But I promise you there's no such thing as an owner's manual written for Arizona, and your owner's manual is written for South Dakota, North Minnesota, North Wisconsin when it's below zero, all the way Death Valley, all the way on I-10 from California to Florida, which is the worst highway there is. The heat there is significant. So this idea that your owner's manual wasn't written for Arizona is just a ploy to get you to do more service because that's income that's been lost to our industry. I'm living proof, and so is a lot of guys in this town, that you can still stick to the owner's manual or specific symptoms. Now, your owner's manual may say that you flush your brake fluid at 80,000 miles, but if it starts looking like dark iced tea, you need to do it now. Everybody agrees. If you pull the dipstick on the transmission and the fluid smells burnt, you need to do it now. If you look at the coolant and it's brown, rusty coolant, you need to do it now. But if the coolant's orange or blue or yellow or green and it's nice and clean, then it doesn't need it unless the balance is off. So we 50-50 coolant and water is 34 below zero. So we have equipment to test it. So if we test yours and it's 10 above zero, you don't have enough coolant. You got more water than coolant. So those are the that's the kind of symptom you want to talk about with. You want your shop to use those kinds of numbers to tell you what you need. So I know what your owner's manual says, but come on out here. I'm going to show you brand new brake fluid, and you look at the iced tea that's in your master cylinder. That show and tell is what you really hope for. Mark at marksalem.com is my email address. My website is marksalem.com. Mark with a K, Salem like the cigarette, Salem like the witches. We'll be back next week.